Warning: the following program contains content that is intended for mature audiences and may be uncomfortable and triggering. Listener's discretion is advised.
Oh, wait. Yeah, I have to say something here. Y'all, I'm new.
Come in, Girly Pop. This is Rocker Boy. Over.
I read you loud and clear, Rocker Boy. Over.
Thank you, Girly Pop. Do you have the diamond in your sights? Over.
I see it. What should I do now?
Girly Pop, I couldn't quite hear you there. Please repeat. Over.
I see it! What now? Over.
Repel down. Security system is now offline. Over.
Hey, who's in here?
Shoot. Matt, there's a guard. Over.
Stay calm. We are so close to this diamond. Please use my code name. Over.
There you are. Get down here. I'm calling the police.
Matt, the heist is over.
Renee, repeat. The heist is what?
It's over.
It's what?
I'm gonna kill him.
Aloha, listeners, and welcome to another episode of Cold Case Chase, a show where I tell all of you, as well as my newest guest, Renee, various mysteries and crimes that have been unsolved over the years. Renee, say hello.
Hey.
This is a very special episode. Renee is going to be finishing the season off with me. Renee is my lovely girlfriend. I pitched this idea to her about 2 weeks ago, and she mulled it over and was gracious enough to say yes. And then was, like, very mad when we didn't record last week.
Yeah, you promised we were going to record. You got it all hyped up, and I was like, oh, yeah, we're going to record. And then we just went to bed like old people.
Yeah, well, we have been old people recently.
That's fair.
And by we, I mean mostly me.
Yeah.
Wintertime is very busy time for Matt now, with work and also Raving Lunatic stuff. And, I mean, hey, I mean, being me is tough.
Oh, sure.
Music stuff too. I mean, like, you have everything. I mean, look at how much we accomplished today.
That's true.
Did a lot today.
I did the laundry.
And I went to work.
Proud of us.
Let's go. We're adulting.
Yeah.
That was a real high five, ladies and gentlemen, not a fake one like me and Shane do. So let's go ahead and continue. Last time we were here, I believe me and John talked about the lovely McBean for way too long in the case of, oh my goodness, it's been so long I forgot, the Mary Celeste.
Yeah, it was like a pirate ship or something.
Yes, it was a spice ship, I believe.
A spice ship?
No, not spice. That's
like a
from
spice
Star
girl?
Wars. No.
Like a this singing ship?
What were the Spice Girls' names?
I don't know.
I'm Ship Spice.
Yo-ho.
Go watch, or go listen to Yo-ho on Spotify.
Shameless plug.
Shameless plug. But this time, we are going to be taking a look at one of the biggest unsolved art heists in recent history, which took place near where you live in Boston, Massachusetts, during St. Patrick's Day celebrations.
That's like the high holiday in Boston. We're all Irish up there.
Yeah, I guess so, huh? You guys all listen to that song.
Shipping up to Boston?
Yeah, that one.
Yeah, that's like our anthem.
If you want to know more and you love art and a good heist story, well, put up your feet, grab a nice cold drink, and let's get ready to party and dive right in. Are you ready for this, Renee?
I have my cold drink, so if it messes up the audio, I'm sorry, but he told me to get a cold drink. So
okay, you can put your cold drink down.
Well, what if I get thirsty?
Girl, we all know you thirsty for me.
No.
Well, with my pride destroyed, let's hop on in. So, a little background first. The Gardner Museum is located in Boston, Massachusetts. It is an art museum that was founded in 1901 by an art collector and philanthropist, Isabel Stewart Gardner. Its entire collection includes paintings, sculptures, decorative arts, and tapestries, housing important examples of European, Asian, and American art. And This is the museum that would fall victim to a historic property theft in 1990. 13 pieces of art were stolen, and although that seems like a low number, the collective value is worth over $500 million.
Wait, I think you should say that like the guy from Austin Powers.
Oh, sorry. Hold on, let me redo that. The collective value is worth over $500 million. Dr. Evil,
everything. I was going to say, Dr. Evil? Love that guy.
I do it Fat Bastard, just... 13 pieces of art were stolen, and although that seems like a low number, the collective value is worth over $500 million. It's a baby!
I've only seen one of those movies.
Oh, that's... he's from the second movie, I believe. And then the third movie, I also believe he's in there as a sumo wrestler.
Oh, I feel like I would love his character. Anyway, continue.
Yes, what was I saying?
We're going to go on 17,000, like, side quests.
ADHD tangents? Yeah, yeah, it's just us. This is me. One bit of irony to note before going into the story is this. The museum had been in the midst of updating its security, which was severely outdated. Perhaps this made it even more vulnerable to being robbed. So, for those unfamiliar with this heist, what happened? Let's get on into it, shall we? It all started on March 18th, 1990, during St. Patrick's Day festivities and partying in Boston. On the night of, there were two guards on duty, both of them rather inexperienced, and one of them was named Richard E. Abbath. For a bit of background on Abbath, he was a dropout from music school and currently part of the rock band.
Hey now, music school dropouts can... That's actually hilarious, because I dropped out of music school and I was also a security guard for a brief moment. I never stole artwork.
Well, this guy didn't steal the artwork.
Oh, I never let anyone...
Or so we think. Matt, play the chipmunk dun-dun-dun noise. Go.
I never stole anything from my job. And I also never let anybody steal anything from my job.
I know you did.
Yeah.
Shout out to a gas station that rhymes with Bumberland Starms.
Well, it was the parent company.
Oh. Shout out to the parent company of Bumberland Starms. Of Flumbies. Richard would go and quote himself saying,
"I was just this hippie guy who wasn't hurting anything, wasn't on anybody's radar, and the next day I was on everybody's radar."
He would perform with his band during the day, and at night he would go to a security job at the museum. Later, Abbath would admit that he would sometimes show up to work stoned or drunk after performing, saying,
"I'd just be getting off the stage somewhere and just wanted to slow down before I went over to the most boring job in the world."
Okay,
dude, dude is, you know what, he's partying, you know what?
No, for real though, a lot of security guards. The job is boring. I never did. I went to work sober because I'm a good Christ-loving woman. But a lot of my coworkers...
Security sober, get pulled over.
What?
I don't know
anymore.
Who's
pulling you over? Your security!
It's like that old saying, if your dentist is your dentist, then who's your dentist's dentist?
What?
But for this one, if you're security guard, then who's your security guard's security guard? Who keeps the security guard secure, Renee?
No one keeps them secure. There's anarchy in security. It's hilarious, actually.
This is exactly like the world money running on fake money and credit cards nowadays. Time to go into a fake political rant. Where's Scott?
I'll go into a real political rant anyway.
Let's continue. Despite that, though, Abbath later insisted that on the night of the robbery, he was completely sober on the job. Well, there you have it. He was sober. Case closed. Abbath didn't do anything wrong. It wasn't him.
I would hope not.
Or so you think. Dun, dun, dun!
Oh, gonna say it's not him. He's a Boston security guard. Honestly, also, how much were they paying these security guards? Because I guarantee it was not worth enough to risk your life to save some artwork.
Probably like minimum wage, yeah. Like $7 an hour or whatever it was back in 1990.
Yeah, that's also not too long ago. It's like 30 years.
34 years, almost.
Hey, I was born in the 90s. That's not too long ago. Wow. Don't say it.
Around 12:54 a.m., about a half hour before the thieves arrived, a fire alarm went off in the museum's third floor, but there was no fire. To this day, it is unclear whether or not the fire alarm was going off as part of the heist scheme or not. But it truly began at 1:24 a.m., when two men buzzed the security desk where Abbott was stationed. The men, both dressed as policemen, said that they were responding to a disturbance call and demanded entry into the museum.
Okay, but like, were they dressed as actual cops, or did they get like
like Party like, City,
yeah, like sexy cop uniforms from parties? I'm imagining like like 200-pound bros in like mini skirts with handcuffs. Like, let me in.
Hey, shoddy, how you doing? Baby girl, what's your name? Let me talk to you. Let me steal your art.
Oh, yeah. Let me steal your art.
Now, why grant entry to two men you don't know, even if they're supposedly police? Well, it could stand to reason that it would make sense for Abbott, a security guard, that a disturbance call would be made on this night because of St. Patrick's Day celebrations happening in the neighborhood. So, you know, Boston's partying hard, you know, Abbott's like, you know what, people are probably partying hard. I can see the logic here behind Abbott. He's also 100% stoned or drunk at this point. Yeah. I wasn't stoned or drunk. Let's be honest here,
that's
buddy.
That's exactly what a stoned person would say.
It's St. Patrick's Day in Boston.
You're drunk.
You're drunk at least.
You're drinking green beer.
Maybe you're crossfaded, but let's continue. On top of that, one reason that Abbott did so, according to him, was that he wanted to avoid getting arrested because he had tickets to a Grateful Dead concert later that day.
Honestly, fair. Like, I wouldn't want to miss that.
Listen, he's just a deadhead, man. But you can't blame the man for being a deadhead. Can I be so 100% with you?
Yeah.
Listen to one Grateful Dead song in my entire life. Don't know the name of it. I've only listened to one, though.
I could not name a single Grateful Dead song.
It's all just, you usually listen to it when you're on an acid trip or high in some form, so never have been high, never saw a reason to listen to the Grateful Dead.
Never been on an acid trip.
I've been on a trip, but not to acid. It was to Florida.
I was like, where is acid?
It's the reflux.
Oh, no. Acid reflux is the worst. See, this is why we're old people. We have old people problems. Acid reflux?
Arthritis?
What kind of 20-year-olds are we?
We have a podcast.
I guess that's right, but like, dude, we're old. Anyway, continue.
Let's continue with this so I don't have to think about my impending time-ticking bomb that I have inside of me.
But we both have AARP memberships, too. Like, we're
I hate this. Let's continue.
We're not helping ourselves.
Hey, if you can't admire Abbott as a security guard, you might as well have to give it for him to his blunt honesty. It seems like he truly didn't care one way or another. Somehow, I kind of respect that, you know?
Again, he's not being paid.
No. In any event, Abbott subsequently buzzed the two policemen into the building, through the employee entrance, I might add, which immediately violated museum protocol. Then, one of the policemen said to Abbott, "You look familiar. I think we have a default warrant out on you. Come out here and show us some identification." This tricked Abbott into leaving his control desk, which happened to be the only desk to have a certain button underneath, which one would alert the police with. He was then immediately ordered by the men to face the wall and stand spread eagle.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. What?
It's pat down season. Pat down with the pats, you know?
St. Pat-down day.
Oh, that was good. Fist bump on that one.
Okay.
Fist me on that one. Later, Abbott...
You can't just drop a sentence like that and continue reading. What?
I'm having too much fun right now.
I know. This is great.
Later, Abbott recalled that when he was being handcuffed, he remembered finding it strange that the cops hadn't frisked him beforehand. And this is when it occurred to him that this could be a robbery.
Okay, so it took a guy, like, literally rubbing his hands all over this man.
No, they didn't frisk him. That's the thing. They just put him in handcuffs.
Wait, but he said spread eagle.
They pushed him against the wall, spread eagle, and put handcuffs on him.
Oh.
No frisk.
Oh. So homeboy was like, wait a minute. They're not feeling me up. Wait a minute.
He was like, I'm being robbed of the best part.
Yeah, I do squats for a reason. Touch my voluptuous glutes.
Oh my goodness, this isn't even the best part. Shortly after Abbott was handcuffed, the second guard named Randy...
What a name.
...arrived after being called down. And Randy was also arrested. It was at this moment that the two men proclaimed, gentlemen, this is a robbery.
What is this, 1920? They take a Tommy gun and shoot their name to the wall, too?
This is a robbery, gentlemen. Ha ha, shmee, yes.
Like, what?
You're being robbed by Tootally Boop and the Fritzy Gang.
Tootally Boop?
Yeah, they had funny names back then. Listen, anybody who names their kid Reginald or Randy deserves to be from the 1920s.
That's fair.
Then the following exchange occurred between Randy, the guard, and one of the men, and it went something a little like this. You're not being arrested. This is a robbery. Don't give us any problems, and you won't get hurt. And then Randy would say, don't worry, they don't pay me enough to get hurt.
Bro, I literally told you, they don't pay security guards anything.
You would know, wouldn't you?
Yeah! I worked up to a management position, and I was still making, like, under 40K a year. And I was pulling, like, 60 hours a week.
Let's continue. The guards were then tied by their hands, heads, and feet with duct tape.
Whoa, whoa, whoa. Hands, head, and feet, like...
Not all together, you weirdo. Like, they were hands were tied, like, in the handcuff position.
Okay.
With the duct tape and the handcuffs, too. Their
I'm imagining feet, them, like, hog-tied.
There was a case not too long ago. I'm pretty sure it was the first episode of this past season. Al Kite, when he was murdered, he was hogtied.
Oof.
Rough. You know, you're kind of in a lucky position right now, because this episode and the next episode aren't very gruesome.
I want the gruesome.
You're going to get it in like two episodes.
Okay, cool.
So when you come back next weekend...
Yeehaw.
We're going to have a fun time.
Oh, yeah.
Recording music and Cold Case Chase.
I love it.
Very sad.
Well.
Let's continue. According to the museum's motion detectors, the robbers had then gone to the second floor and then split up. They then removed various pieces of art from the walls. While they were removing the art, one of the alarms went off, which was meant to alert security personnel that someone had gotten too close to the artwork, but the robbers were able to find the alarm and smash it. About an hour later, at 2:28 a.m., the robbers returned to the security counter, making a second check on the guards tied up in the basement. Then they proceeded to remove all the tapes from the security cameras that captured their movements in various places in the museum, including outside the side door. They got ready to leave 13 minutes later, making two separate trips to take the art to their vehicle and transport it to their secret location. Later, there was a witness who recalled seeing the men outside of the museum, apparently sitting in a red hatchback car. As stated before, the two men stole 13 pieces of art, including three Rembrandts and a gilded filial eagle from a Napoleonic banner, which was just outside of the tapestry room at the museum. Apparently, they had tried to steal a fourth Rembrandt, but found it too difficult to remove from the wall.
I bet it was tacked up there with, like, command strips. Those things are really hard to take down.
No, they aren't. Actually, I'm not going to endorse this product unless they sponsor us. Command! Or Scotch. Whoever makes command strips. Who makes command strips?
I have no idea. I think it's Scotch.
I think it's Scotch, right? Yeah. It's the Scotch Company. If you would like to endorse us with either your command strips, your tape, or your liquor...
Liquor.
Oh, I barely Scotch. Know her.
Bruh, okay, no. You're taking this whole segment out.
Why?
That's a terrible joke.
Nope.
Oh my gosh.
Cool fun fact here, Renee. We make terrible jokes.
Yeah, I know. I'm dating you. I'm used to it.
Ew. About 4 hours after the thieves left with the items, between 6:45 and 8:16 in the morning, the guards working the morning shift showed up to their shift, but they were unable to enter the museum. This prompted the museum's deputy security director to call the police, and at 8:30 a.m., officers showed up and discovered the two guards, Randy and Abbott, still handcuffed in the basement. The guards had gotten a good look at the thieves because they hadn't covered their faces, although the two men still wore gloves, which prevented them from leaving fingerprints. Despite their faces, though, Abbott couldn't remember what the men looked like, and he was questioned by the Boston police, although he stated later in 2005. And I quote from Richard Abbott,
"One of them looked like Colonel Klink off Hogan's Heroes. Yeah, that's what I can remember."
Dude got up close and personal with these guys. Dude got not frisked, but like handcuffed by them. Couldn't remember what they looked like, you know? I feel like I would remember.
Maybe. He was probably high.
He was 100% cross-rated.
Probably, yeah.
At very least drunk. It's St. Patrick's Day in Boston. There's no way he's not drunk.
He was probably so drunk there was only one robber. And he was just seeing doubles.
Reminds me of that old joke. Dad, how do you know if somebody's drunk driving? Well, son, somebody would point at those two red cars over there and see that they see four. Dad, there's only one red car over there. The biggest takeaway here is that this guard apparently watched Hogan's Heroes. Interesting. Mm. Anyway, moving on. In the aftermath of the robbery, many people wondered why the thieves only took 13 pieces and left behind certain works that were worth much more money, such as the Titian or a Michelangelo work. People also wondered why the thieves spent so much time trying to take the filial eagle, which was considered a much more obscure object than most of the other artwork in that museum. But those were only a few of the mysteries surrounding this property theft. 4 years later, in April of 1994, a new development occurred. The museum received an anonymous letter, which claims to know the art's location after the theft. The author of the letter displayed great knowledge of the stolen pieces as well as the general art world. The anonymous writer also stated that the stolen pieces were safe in a controlled, secured environment. But the letter claimed that if the museum wanted the art back, they would have to act quickly because a buyer from a different country could potentially purchase the art and claim legal ownership. The writer demanded a sum total of $2.6 million to facilitate the artwork's return. The museum agreed to these terms. After the museum agreed, they received another letter from the writer, where the author expressed their pleasure that the museum was interested in negotiating. However, the letter expressed discouragement by the intervention of local law enforcement and federal authorities. Because of the law enforcement's involvement, the writer wondered, in the letter, if they were trying to have the middleman arrested.
How would they discourage the law? Like, I'm imagining this person, whoever, and also, I think that frat boys stole the artwork. That's why they didn't go for, like, the big ticket items. They're like, yeah, bro, that would look cool in the dorm. And, like, that's the controlled area. It's just, like...
It's Brock's dorm room.
Yeah, it's, like, above Chad and Brad's bunk beds. and also, I think...
There's, like, a little bit of cheese whiz in the corner. Yeah. And like a can of ravioli that like it spilled a little bit on the ground.
It's just a little bit.
Yeah.
No, so like here's my hypothesis, right? These two frat boys, stole the artwork, and then like a couple years later, the frat house, the chapter is in danger, right? It's gonna be shut down because these boys are partying too much.
So they need $2.6 million for alcohol.
$2.6 million. They're trying to throw like a rager. So,
bro, imagine if we extorted this official museum.
Yeah.
for $2.6 million.
So they send the first letter. It's like, hey, we have the art. Don't worry. It's safe. We want money. And then the museum's like, okay, we'll give you money. And then they're like, oh, we didn't think we'd get this far. Okay, we'll give it back to you. But, like, don't call the cops or we'll burn it or something. Like, how do you discourage the cops from not being there? Don't
my favorite, do it, please. My favorite part about your hypothesis is, like, I feel like in the bottom right-hand corner, like, underneath, like, you know, a whole bunch of, like, just weird stains that nobody knows what they are.
You know it's, what they are. You just don't want to admit
it. You don't want to admit it. There's just, like, a little writing, like, $2.6 million, and there's, like, a little star, and then at the bottom there's the other star, and it's, like, Orboos.
No, it's, like, $2.6 million or an unlimited Dave and Buster's game pass.
You want to know something else that was in this letter?
What?
Let me continue on. The author also wrote in all caps, you cannot have both, so, which means that they cannot have the person arrested as well as the art back. They can have one or the other. I would have maybe chosen to have the person arrested, but, you know, hey, winners can't be choosers, I guess.
Beggars.
No, winners.
No, I don't think that's the saying.
You know what? Is my podcast. We're moving on.
Well...
The anonymous tipper also stated that even if they see no way of following through with negotiations, there would still be clues given to the museum about the art's whereabouts.
Like Blue's Clues?
We just got a letter.
We just got a letter.
We just got a letter.
I wonder who it's from.
You cannot have both.
If you want the art back, you gotta meet me in the park with a Happy Meal. I want chicken nuggies.
And booze.
And booze.
Since those two letters, the author has not been heard from since. Are you ready for the second part of this podcast, Renee?
The second part?
It's time for the theories.
Oh, well, I already have one.
Well, we already heard Renee's theory.
That's one theory.
Just a theory. A game theory!
That's probably why they had cop costumes. From, like, a frat Halloween party.
You know, your hypothesis is making more and more sense.
Yeah. And St. Patrick's Day?
They're both just drunk frat kids.
Listen, what is every single college kid within a 500-mile radius of Boston doing on St. Patrick's Day?
Drinking.
I think partying.
I think anybody on St. Patrick's Day weekend who goes to a college is probably drinking.
Exactly. Except for Chad and Brad. They said, no,
we're
going to dress up like cops.
We're going to steal 3 Rembrandts and a freaking eagle.
Yeah, and they stole 13 pieces because it was the 13th. Right? It was the 13th of March?
18th.
18th?
17th? One momento. Sure? It says it.
I'm holding. Was it the 13th? I feel like it was the 13th. Maybe not.
Hold on.
Wait, isn't St. Paddy's Day like always on the 17th?
March 18th.
March 18th.
I was right.
Okay. I'll give you this one. You were right.
Thank you. Let's start with these theories. Let's hop into them.
Okay, so Chad and Brad.
Our first theory is that the artwork was stolen by a thief named Brian McDevitt.
No, that's not my first theory. My first theory, and I'm sticking to it, 2 frat boys named Chad and Brad stole the artwork. But anyway, continue with your theories.
Brian McDevitt.
Brad.
Who had previously committed a similar robbery in the 1980s. In that instance in the 1980s, McDevitt hijacked a FedEx truck and dosed the driver of that truck with ether. McDevitt carried duct tape and wore a uniform. His plan was to bind museum employees at the Hyde Collections in Glen Falls, New York, and cut out paintings from their frames. Unfortunately for McDevitt in that robbery, he and his accomplices got delayed by traffic and arrived at the museum after it had closed for the night, and thus their plans were foiled. Traffic saved the day.
Womp womp. Sorry, buddy.
did you just womp womp?
You can't commit a crime because we're closed. Wait, would he have paid admission to go steal the paintings? What was his plan?
Hear me out here. $15 for admission? $3.6 million in stolen art.
Yeah, but what are you going to do? You're going to go, like, hide? Are you going to be, like, the 2 guys in Home Alone 2 and hide in the toy houses in the toy shop?
Yeah,
and
wait for them to close? It's pretty easy nowadays, you know?
What are you talking about? There's security guards. They do rounds. I know. I was a security guard. You got to, like, secure the building.
Honey, they're all drunk and high.
Not if they're old.
1980s.
Okay, yeah.
There you go. Let's continue. In any event, McDevitt ended up serving a few months in jail for this attempted robbery. Incidentally, at the time of the heist, McDevitt lived around 10 minutes away from the Gardner Museum. Because of this, and because of his past history, the FBI questioned McDevitt in 1992. McDevitt was also put in front of a grand jury and questioned again. His lawyer stated that his client had no knowledge of this heist.
How did they put him in jail for a few months for the attempted robbery? He pulls up to the museum and the museum is closed. He tried to break in?
Maybe he tried to break in.
Because, like, if he didn't, that's hilarious.
Well, he also dosed a FedEx driver.
That's fair. He probably went to prison for a couple months for, like, you know, drugging someone. But I'm just imagining, what's his name?
McDevitt.
McBean! There's a lot of Mick.
McBean! I miss you, John.
I'm just imagining this dude pulling up to the museum, going to the door, trying to open it. He's like, oh, man. And there's a cop right there. He's like,
what are you doing, buddy?
He's like, oh, I was going to go steal some artwork. I mean, oh, you're under arrest.
Let's move on to our second theory. Our second theory is that the heist was an inside job, with some of the suspicion cast on security guard Richard Abbeth.
Nah, he's innocent.
Let me show you some of these facts, because there are a lot of facts here.
Okay, he's innocent.
So, the posit that it was an inside job would probably explain how the thieves knew where the only alarm button was located. It would also explain how the thieves knew that the artwork didn't have any anti-theft devices attached to it. Later on, the FBI made the claim that Richard Abbeth had not yet been ruled out as a suspect, as there is no reason to believe that he could have been involved. It was not just the fact that Abbeth was, as he admitted, very poor at his job and didn't care one bit about it. It should also be brought up again that Abbeth somehow could not recall the faces of the robbers shortly after the heist when they were up close and personal with him.
Yeah, well, he was intoxicated.
That's not confirmed.
I'm confirming it right now.
Even a man who had admitted to getting stoned and drunk often. This is someone who had said he was sober the night of the robbery. So how was it possible that he didn't recognize the faces? That's where the doubt comes in as far as Abbott's innocence. Sorry, I can't speak today. Plus, even though the thieves failed to destroy motion sensor equipment, the sensors, strangely enough, didn't record the thieves on the first floor. And at least one piece was stolen from the first floor. But the equipment did, in fact, pick up Abbeth's movement in the room before the robbers even arrived. So that means somebody shut off the security system in the bottom floor.
Oh, man. You know what? I take it back. He did it. Death penalty. He did it.
Death penalty?
Death penalty.
Maybe let's continue real quick.
Turn the chair. I'm kidding.
I have a few more facts here. It should be also noted again that Abbeth broke security protocols by even granting the disguised policeman entry. Museum policy prohibits allowing entry to any unauthorized personnel, and that includes police. Abbeth claimed that he wasn't aware of this policy. However, he had broken protocol and violation policies in the past. One such occasion where Abbeth violated protocol was during one of the museum's New Year's Eve parties. He had snuck in some friends into the museum that night. While that particular violation seemed fairly harmless, that wasn't the cause of Abbott's third violation. 2 years ago, a video was released and it showed Abbeth allowing entry to an unauthorized visitor, and it would just so happen that this was the night before the heist took place. It is generally believed by law enforcement that this unknown person could have been scoping out the area for a dry run of the heist. Abbeth claims that he has no memory of this person despite this action being caught on tape. Despite that, Abbeth stated in an interview, which took place in 2015, that he is still angry about what happened that night. None of this, if you add it up, seems like a very good look for Abbeth. But alas, we can't exactly be sure of his innocence or if he was truly involved.
Well, I kind of want to know how he's doing now, you know, like post-robbery. Also,
I mean, that interview was in 2015. He said he was pretty angry about it.
Well, I know he's angry, but I want to know if he was involved, you know,
Do you think he'd just be like, yeah, it was me, I did it?
No, he's not going to admit. He's going to take that to the grave. My question is, did they ever get the art back?
No.
Oh, they never got the art back, so there was no money. So the art's just in the wind.
Yep.
Did they sell it to that off? They must have.
They probably did.
Well, how's Abbott doing financially? Did he get a cut of that?
Maybe. Or maybe something in this third theory maybe might tickle your fancy.
I think Brad and Chad are tickling my fancy the most, but I'll listen to your theory.
I don't like the fact that Brad and Chad are tickling you.
They're tickling my fancy. They're not tickling me.
Let's continue. Another theory posited by Dutch private investigator Arthur Brand is that the stolen art is in Ireland and in possession of what is left of the Irish Republican Army, a.k.a. the IRA.
Let's go!
A.k.a. Renee's extended family.
Yeah, I'm like very Irish.
You're from Massachusetts. It would be weird if you weren't.
Yeah, that's fair.
So, a little background. Arthur Brand is a private investigator in Holland that has been referred to as the Indiana Jones of the art world. As such, in his endeavors to recover stolen art, Brand has posed as several different figures, including a Texas oil millionaire, a representative for the princess and sheiks of the Middle Easterns, and also a general criminal.
Just a general criminal.
Yeah, general criminal.
He doesn't specialize in anything.
There was also one instance where he negotiated with gangs to recover $25 million of artwork. So this guy's legit. In 1991, Brand was able to acquire images of the stolen art in storage in Holland. Then, 19 years later, in 2010, Brand had heard that the pieces were claimed by a member of the IRA. Brand worked on the case with the FBI for approximately 12 years, and from that work, he theorized that the 13 pieces of art were stolen at first by a small-time thieves. In turn, those thieves sold the art to the U.S. gang members, who then possibly shipped those pieces off to Ireland, and presumably to a higher-ranking IRA commander.
I think it's funny that the crime happened on St. Patrick's Day. And they're now it's in Ireland.
Now it's in IRA territory, baby. The only thing I can think of whenever I hear IRA is, have you signed up for a Roth IRA yet?
No, we need to, though.
We should, yeah. Brand spoke...
Old people.
Brand spoke about this to WBZ News, saying that he was negotiating with people in Ireland to get this art back. He estimated that he could get the pieces back in a matter of months, but he would not detail how or why. Brand did say the following, however.
Former IRA sources have told me, or people that I know, that there has been talk about these paintings for years within the IRA.
Brand said that when he was talking with people based on the two good leads. One of them having to do with the IRA, and the other lead he was keeping a mum about.
What?
Keeping a mum about. He was keeping it to himself.
He wasn't keeping a dad about?
I am going to continue.
Oh, what? So you can make bad jokes, but I can't?
Yes. That's how it works.
No.
He said the following.
We have another lead. We cannot say too much, but it has to do with the paintings and the IRA and the Netherlands.
The Netherlands? I have another theory. I think the reason why they stole these specific paintings is because when you put them all together and then you put lemon juice on them and put them in an oven, kind of like, what was his name? Nicolas Cage in the Declaration of Independence?
That's not the name of the movie!
No,
you know Nicolas Cage in the Declaration of Independence, like he signed the thing with his John Hancock.
No, what's the movie?
National Treasure.
Yeah, you know the scene where he's like, "I'm gonna steal the Declaration," and then he like puts.
That's like the most famous. Yeah.
Okay, let me speak.
You know those two scenes are very far apart.
I'm gonna
steal the Declaration of Independence, pouring lemon juice on the Declaration.
Yeah, no. I think that's why they stole these specific artwork. You put them together, it makes a giant secret map that the IRA needs. And
to reclaim the potatoes?
What? No.
Or destroy the queen?
Yeah. It gives them secrets about England. The crown.
Margaret Thatcher. In any event, at this time, Brand believed that the investigation and the leads that they were following were narrowing everything down, or rather, making the haystack smaller. Regarding this, an FBI spokesperson named Kristen Cetera said, "The FBI believes with high confidence that we have identified those responsible for the theft, even though we still don't know where the art is currently located." So, those are our only three theories, or I guess suspects, maybe, kind of tied to this particular heist. Other suspects have been included members of the Boston Irish mob, including the most famously, the late James Whitey Burglar, or in some other crime figures like Robert
Burglar.
James, his nickname is Whitey. His last name is not Burglar, it's actually Bulger, but I thought it was funny that his last name looks
White
like Burglar.
Bulger?
White Bulger?
Bulger?
I think it's Bulger.
I think it's Bulger.
Is it Bulger?
My childhood best friend's dad.
Like, Bulger? I barely know her.
Bro! Oh, I'm so done with you. I love you, but oh my gosh.
There was even a suspect. Oh my goodness. This is not a good sentence, John. Why are you making me say this out loud? There was even a suspect fingered by the FBI.
Bro.
I think he meant fingerprinted.
No, he didn't. He knew what he was writing.
But his name was Bobby Gentile. In any event, for many years after the robbery, the Gardner Museum was offered a reward of $5 million for any information that would return the art to them, and hopefully in good condition. Eventually, the offer was doubled to $10 million for a short period of time. However, that expired on December 31st, 2019. On top of that, the statute of limitations for prosecuting somebody for the thefts passed and expired in the mid-1990s. To that end, in the 2005 Boston U.S. attorney, Boston's U.S. attorney said that he would not prosecute whoever came forward with the stolen artwork. To this day, no new information has come out about the whereabouts of the artwork or who may have been involved in the theft. Hopefully one day we will know the answer to this lingering question. But let's be honest, we all know who was responsible.
Brad and Chad. The frat boys.
I was more thinking, Alexander McBean!
Nah.
Or bringing back the season one villain, Ted Cruz.
This man ain't my son.
Which reminds me, I had better go check what happened to Girly Pup. That haven't heard from her in a while.
She's dead.
Girly Pup, come in, over. Come in, Girly Pup, over. Who do you think it was, hon?
I told you who
I think it was.
You think
it was Brad and Chad?
I think it was the frat boys. And I think if the art ever does come back, it's going to be stained with barbecue sauce.
Barbecue sauce and cheese whiz?
Yeah.
And a little bit of alcohol.
Nah,
but
honestly.
But very specifically Miller Lite.
Nah, it was probably, in all honesty, it was probably the Irish mob up in Boston.
The IRA?
Yeah.
Or not the IRA. The Boston mob gave it to the IRA.
I mean, they're probably connected.
Yeah, probably.
Like, I feel like the IRA is like the thugs of Ireland, so.
Whoa, we're just calling them thugs now. IRA, please don't come after us. I think Richard Abbott and his friends
I stand with
did.
The IRA. No, I'm kidding. We gotta take that
hold
out.
Hold on. Raving Lunatic Media does not support any of the heinous things that the IRA has done.
I'm not a part of Raving Lunatic.
The unheinous things, on the other hand.
We also don't support any of the anus things.
I don't know where you're talking about. Raving Lunatic Media specifically stands for the anus things. I still think it's Abbath. That's who I think it is.
What if it was Abba?
You are the thieving queen. Young and sweet, stole like 13
pieces of tar.
Pieces of what?
I was
pieces of dot.
I was trying to say art, but I had a stroke.
Pieces of dot. I had fun. Did you have fun?
I had fun. I'm going to regret some of the things I said, but I had fun.
I had a lot of fun. You know what you're going to have a lot of fun doing too?
What?
Listening to all the other things on Raving Lunatic Media. We have some other amazing shows. Renee, can you list all of the other shows that we have? Let's see. Hold on. Let me count how many we have. We have... five?
All right, I'm gonna try. Ready? Okay. Cold Case, obviously, we're here.
Yep.
Love it. ZTF.
Yep.
Zodiac Task Force, love that. I almost said Gravity Falls. Autumn Falls.
Yep, coming Autumn out. Falls is coming out.
Coming out. Game Face.
Yep.
That's you. You're you and Nico. Woo! Oh no, what's the last one? Don't tell me, don't tell me, don't tell me, don't tell me. Hold on. Hold on. It's Mark's show, right?
It's Mark, Scott, and Thomas, yes.
What's the premise of Sci-Fi Malady?
There we go.
Look at that. I'm a good girlfriend. Yay.
We also have one more show I forgot to mention, Quick Rants. Scott will be coming back with that as well. But he, that show, it's not dead by any means, but it's on its off season right now. But yeah, those are all the shows. Go listen to those. New episode of ZTF coming out in February. New episode of Cold Case Chase probably coming out, honestly, also in February, which is this one. Maladies every week. Autumn Falls will be debuting February 22nd. A lot of good stuff in February.
Yeah. And I hope y'all like me, because you're kind of stuck with me for the rest of the season.
Amen to that. But thank you all for listening. Thank you all for supporting. If you liked, make sure to give a 5-star review. If you're on Apple Podcasts, make sure to write a 5-star review. Like the show, comment down below, and we will see you next time on Cold Case Chase. Bye! 'PS, we don't actually support the IRA. Renee, say it.
Okay. I don't support the IRA.
Thank you. Mostly. Bye.
What? I said mostly. For legal reasons, everything I said on this podcast was in fact a joke. I do not support the IRA.